Katsugo Katz Miho was one of those kids you just couldn't help but like. It didn't hurt that he was handsome, even before he put on a uniform. The girls at the University of Hawaii thought he looked pretty dreamy, almost like a movie star. A Japanese Cary Grant, they said. Especially when he slicked back his hair and tossed you that easy, carefree smile of his. But it wasn't just his looks that drew people to Katz Miho. It was the hand he always extended to you, the look he gave you, the way it invited you in, the way it said, "Hey, let's get to know each other. Let's talk story. Let's get something going." There was a casual grace, a natural optimism, a happy-go-lucky assuredness to him that you just couldn't turn away from. Early on the morning of December 7, 1941, he was in Honolulu, asleep at the Charles Atherton House, a stately shell-pink building that the YMCA operated as a dormitory for students at the university, though the place looked more like an English country manor house than a dorm. As the sun rose over Oahu that morning, Katz stirred in his bed, thinking about the day ahead. Ordinarily, he would have slept in late on a Sunday morning, but word among his friends was that there was an interesting new minister at the Church of the Crossroads just down the street. Better yet, he'd heard that a pair of particularly attractive sisters from the Big Island were going to be playing piano at the morning service. He and some buddies had decided to give the church a try. After church, he figured he would study for his last few exams and then start preparing to go home to Maui for Christmas break. He couldn't wait to get home. His first semester at the university had been a great success. He joined the Reserve Officers Training Corps, ROTC, made friends on campus and at Atherton House, was getting good grades, and was having the time of his life. But he missed his mother's cooking and the company of his siblings. And he was looking forward to hanging out on the beach with some of his old friends from Maui High, the ones who had gone from high school straight to work on the sugarcane and pineapple plantations. Maybe they'd play some barefoot football or have a cookout on the beach at Kihei, the way they had when they were kids. At 6:26 that morning, just as Katz was beginning to wake up, the USS Antares, a Navy cargo vessel, arrived in restricted water off Pearl Harbor, towing a 500-ton steel barge. In the dim gray light of dawn, the skipper, Lawrence Grannis, noticed an odd cigar-shaped object in the water 1,500 yards off his starboard bow. Uncertain what he was looking at in the thin gray morning light, but suspecting that it might be some sort of strange submarine, Grannis radioed the nearby destroyer, Ward, and suggested that the ship's captain, William Outerbridge, and his crew investigate. At the same time, flying overhead in a Navy PBY patrol plane, Ensign William Tanner also spotted the object. Thinking it was an American submarine in trouble, he dropped two smoke pots into the water near it to mark its position. The Ward turned toward the smoke and accelerated to 25 knots. Bearing down rapidly on what soon everyone could see in the dawn light was indeed a submarine, but a very odd, very small one, definitely not American. At 6:45, the Ward opened fire and launched depth charges. The first shot missed, the shell sailing over the sub, but the second hit the vessel squarely at the intersection of the conning tower and the hull. Immediately, the sub began to heel over and sink. Almost simultaneously, one of the depth charges appeared to detonate directly under it, and oil bubbled to the surface, confirming the kill. At 6:54, the Ward transmitted a message to Lieutenant Commander Harold Kaminsky, the 14th Naval District duty officer at Pearl. "We have attacked, fired upon, and dropped depth charges on a submarine operating in defensive sea areas." Kaminsky, startled, hesitated, uncertain whether to believe it. There had been a number of false sightings of hostile submarines in recent months. On the other hand, The news from East Asia had been growing more troubling for weeks.